quite the reputation to have to be the cheese people, right? Sure, if I like that or not, but I guess that's our lot in life, the cheese people. Yep. So how many of you like cheese? Raise your hand if you like cheese. Well, that's good. I'm glad. Makes me feel like I'm in good company. Safe place to be. Yep. So yeah, I appreciated the devotional, Philip. Thanks for sharing those thoughts. And boy, everybody's grown so much and changed. It's actually been over 10 years since we were here. Does that sound right, Wes? I think it is. Yeah, I think it's been probably 10 or 11 years. So how much time do I have? Just joking. I just wondered what you'd say. Nobody knows for sure how much time we have, do we? All I need. Oh, boy. So I thought maybe I'd tell you a little bit about Roberta and I and our family, where they are today. So yeah, time flies, doesn't it, Wes? Because I can still remember you and I talking on the stairs before we left to go home after church let out. And it just seems like it was yesterday. And here we are 10, 11, maybe even 12 years later. The time certainly flies by. And I think the older we get, you hear the expression, the older we get, the faster time goes. And it's true. It just seems to fly by, days and weeks and months and years. We were talking about, probably not a good thing to talk about. We talked about COVID a little bit. We went past that restaurant just on the other side of Quarryville, family restaurant on the right-hand side, if you're coming from like Quarryville to here. And it was full. I mean, the parking lot was full. It was a Wednesday night in February. What's that? Oh, okay. It does seem like more people are getting out, though, all around than even a year ago. I think people are just feeling more comfortable. But we were talking about that, and I thought, wow, how long ago was that? It's hard to believe how long ago that was that all that started. So time has a way of moving on. So we have five children, and we attend Lincoln Mennonite Church. Our oldest, Joy, is 30, and she and her husband, Kyle, have two children. Kyle is a teacher at Faith Builders, teaches at the Christian Day School there, high school. And so Joy would have been 20 or 19 when we stopped coming here. It's hard to believe. And then Hope, our second oldest, which is just a year younger than Joy, lives in Maryland in Hagerstown with her husband, and they have two children. They just had two boys in 2022, about 11 months apart? So that's kind of unusual, isn't it? So Hope has her hands full right now. I'll tell you what. Because she has two babies. She has a newborn and she has one that's not even walking and it's a toddler, right? Or not even a toddler. He's just starting to take some steps now, the oldest of the two. So we're grandparents, Wes. We have five grandchildren now. It's hard to believe. I wasn't ready for that to happen so fast. And so Hope's husband, Braden, is in his third year of medical school. And so they plan to move back to Honeybrook, Lord willing, in April. So we're looking forward to that. And we can have our grandchildren at home there on the farm with us. And then AJ and Jenna, his wife, are over in Germany right now. They're working with refugees over there. They went over there about a month ago. So they're away right now in Germany, and they have two children as well. And then Mary Kate's down in Hagerstown helping Hope right now for the week. And she works with us in our family business full time. And then Jake, our youngest, is a sophomore in college at Lancaster Bible College. So time marches on. So there you have the update, in case you're wondering where things are by now. So, yeah, I know the other thought I had, too, was when we would bring our children down here is a little bit of a drive to get here. And so one of the things we often did is we stopped at the McDonald's and Gap for milkshakes. And they would just be so excited about these milkshakes. So we would talk about the milkshakes on the way down here. They're going to get milkshakes. And then by the time we got back to Gap, oftentimes in the evenings, they were asleep. And they didn't even know that we had gone past McDonald's, let alone got a milkshake. So but on the way down here anyway, Roberta said, "We should get milkshakes tonight. You and I, let's get milkshakes." I think we're going to have milkshakes on the way home. Bring back some good memories. So time, there's a song I remember from when I was young, and it said something like this: "Time, you ain't no friend of mine." So is time a friend of ours? Just a thought I had when I was sitting there. Would you consider time to be a friend or a foe? What are your thoughts? What's that? Yeah, that's true. And that's a good point. I think it can be, right? It can be a friend in a lot of ways. And sometimes, yeah, it could feel the other way, couldn't it? So time is an interesting thought. We can't really add time to our lives. We can't add time to a day. We can't add time to a week. We can't have 25 hours, even though sometimes we wish we could in a day. We have 24, that's what God gave us. And so we can't really control time, but the lesson highlights the fact that we need to make good use of the time that God does give us. God gives us time, and it's our responsibility, and that's what we want to talk about a little bit tonight, that we use that time wisely. And so, you know, we're all faced with a decision each day. What am I going to do with my time? What do we do? From the second we wake up to the second we go to bed, we have choices to make. So this is lesson 5, of course, and it's principle number 3, classify and choose. And if you go back to the beginning of the book here, it says, and I didn't have the liberty of having this book until just this morning. So I was studying the wrong book, but that's okay. The book we were using at Lincoln was the different book, and I just assumed you had the same book, but that's fine. I actually like this book better. But principle number 1 was character. Principle number 2 is consider the end. And principle number 3 is to classify and choose. And that's where we are now. So classify and choose. Overcoming patterns of procrastination, crisis management, and clutter. And when I read those, I had to think to myself, that's a lot. That's a lot to cover. It's a lot to think about. How do they all fit together? Patterns of procrastination, crisis management, and clutter. Well, if we go down to the second page at the bottom for class discussion, they have some definitions for these that make a little bit more sense, understanding the terms, the following definitions for the terms used in this lesson. So procrastination is to put off until a later time or to delay action. Crisis management is the habit of waiting to make a decision until the future outcome rests upon the outcome of that decision. And then clutter is to fill or litter with things that are unorganized, disorderly, in a disorderly manner. So when we think about time and the purpose here, it says it's a good thing to form ideals of what we want to be in life, and even a better thing to put those ideals into practice. So as we think of the things that we want, like what we want to be in life, how much time do you spend thinking about that? Like what would define you as an individual, as a person? How much time do we consider that? What do we really want to be known as, or what do we want people to think of us as, or even more importantly, how do we want God to look at us or think of us? One of our children was just started dating recently, and I said, you really should have, and we've done this with all of our children, you know, write down what your goals are and what your dating standards will be. Take the time to write those things out and have a plan. And I think we should have a plan for our lives. We should think of it, consider that. We should be a thoughtful people as Christians. We should think about those things, and we should think about what we want to be. I know it's a lot different than the way I was raised. When I was raised in the home that I was raised in, when you had that thought, what do you want to be? It was more along the lines of what career will you choose? What do you want to be when you grow up? I still haven't decided. I haven't figured it out yet, Wes. I never thought in a million years that I'd want to be a cheesemaker. If God had told me when we got married, or told Roberta and I, you're going to be a dairy farmer and a Mennonite, the first thing I would have said is, well, I've never milked a cow. And the second thing I would have said is, well, what's a Mennonite? So God works in mysterious ways, but I certainly never thought that I'd ever be a cheesemaker. So sometimes the things we want to be or we think we're going to be turn out a lot different, don't they? God has other plans for us. But this isn't that thought. What do you want to be when you grow up? That can put a lot of pressure on young people. I know for me, when I was in high school, I had to choose which college I'd go to and what I'd major in and what career I wanted to pursue. And it's stressful when you're young. A lot of times we don't know those things. But I think the most important thing is, how do we want to live our lives as a Christian? How do we want to order our lives? We spent a lot of time with our children when they were young, having family devotions. I trust your parents did that, or you're doing that now as parents. We sang together a lot. I always enjoyed the singing here at Rollinsville. I thought the singing was just incredible. It's hard to believe that there's not that many. Well, there are a number of people here in this small church, but it sounded like a huge church. And I could hear Wes singing behind me, and that encouraged me to sing louder. And yeah, I love to sing. I'm not trained in any way, and I don't know how to read music, but I can follow along, and I like to sing, and we sang a lot with our children. And so we had certain goals for our children, things we wanted to do. I remember years ago when my wife and I started visiting and looking at properties in Lancaster County, or that area, I should say. We live in Honeybrook. So this is going back 20 some years ago. I think Aaron Horst, maybe the deacon at Lichty's, had invited us to come to a program, a material program at Martindale Mennonite Church. And I think at that time, we probably only had, how many children did we have when we moved to Honeybrook? Was it three? So Jake is the one that was born when we lived there. Okay, Mary Kate was a baby. So we had four of our five children. We went to a program, a Terry Hill Gospel Team program at Martindale. And I had never really heard singing like that before. And we sat there in the back, and I just remember listening to these young people sing and thinking, wow, that is the most beautiful thing I've ever heard. And how would it be if someday we could actually have children that would sing in a chorus like that? That would be a dream for me to experience that. And we did. We got to, with God's blessing and His grace and His leading in our lives, we're able to experience that. And we still do. In fact, Mary Kate's planning to sing in another chorus this year. And we're the chorus parents for New Creations for several years. We have some people here that are sympathetic to that cause. And that was a lot of fun. That was a great experience for us. So we need to have a plan. I think we need to be purposeful. The purpose-driven life was a big deal several years ago. And I thought of that too as I was studying this lesson. So we want to be a people of purpose. So as we consider these things and we want to do well with the time that we have, it says the lesson stresses how to evaluate what are the important uses of time, and it gives pointers how to use these and put them into practice. We can never make more time. All we can do is order our lives to make the best use, like I said, of the time that God gives us. So one of the things I thought of is overcoming patterns of procrastination, crisis management. So we need to be overcomers as Christians. Jesus overcame the world, didn't he? And I think as Christians, we can be overcomers. And I think that's one of the things that gives the Christian life to me more meaning and more purpose. And it makes it exciting, if I can say it that way, because we can grow in grace and become more conformed to the image and likeness of God. And we can be overcomers. We can overcome the flesh. We can overcome sinful desires. We can overcome selfishness. With God's grace, we can overcome those things. We can be overcomers. So I think that's another thing that I thought of as I thought of overcoming these patterns. So the thoughts to ponder, it says here, as we go down through the book, do I habitually choose to do what is the most important thing for me to do? Does my schedule reflect the goals of my mission statement? Is what I spent time doing today really important, or was it just insistent, which would be just regular and repeated, just do the same thing over and over again? Did you ever ask somebody, it's just a figure of speech we use, and I'm not sure if we should or shouldn't use it, but it's pretty common to say, hey, how's it going? You know, I see a lot of people in the course of a day come into our store, and I like to walk around and visit with the customers. And a lot of them I know because I see the same people over and over, and I've gotten to know them on a personal level. And your first thought is, hey, how's it going? You know, Dave, the trash truck driver, he comes pretty much every morning at the same time. He parks his trash truck. He comes in, gets a breakfast sandwich and a coffee. And sometimes he has his children with him, and I usually give him cookies if they're there. And I say, hey, Davey, how's it going? And he says, well, it's gone pretty good. You know, how's it going with you? And so we get into these things where we say, well, how's it going? But do we really mean those things? And do we really care? And so one of the things I thought of that's important to me is I like to try, and I'm not suggesting that I've mastered this or that I've arrived by any means, but it's a goal I have. I think one thing we can do with our time is to purpose in our hearts that every day we're going to somehow bless somebody in some way. Just bless somebody. Do something to touch somebody's life in a positive way so that we can make the best use of the time we have here. And I don't always do that, but I do try to do that. I try to do that as often as I can. And I thought about it, of course, today because I thought I'm running out of time. I've got to get ready for church. Who have I blessed? There's always your wife. You can always turn to your wife or one of your children if you haven't met anybody else during the day. But I think we should live lives that are committed to blessing other people. Was it insistent? Do we do the same thing? So you ask people, so how are you doing? How's it going? And a lot of people say it's gone good. It's gone good. You know, yeah, good. I'm doing good. And yeah, well, that's good. Good. How are you doing? Yeah, I'm doing good too. Things are going good. But then every now and then you ask somebody and they'll be like, oh, it's going. And I think, oh boy, how bad is it? It's going. And I, oh boy, another day. It was just, it's going. And I think, oh boy, I want to, every day that we have is a gift from God. Every single day is a gift from God. And we need to make the most of the moments that God gives us. We need to give everything we do, I believe, our very best. We need to do it heartily as unto the Lord, whether it's making cheese or milking cows or delivering home oil or whatever, driving truck or teaching school or working on computer programs. We have to give God our very best, and we need to view each day that we have as a gift, because we simply don't know how long we're going to be here. And I just don't think we should ever take a day of our life if we could help it. Now, we have days we'll admit are bad, tough days, are rough. And you want the day to come to an end. And you think, I just can't do anything right today. Nothing's going my way. It's just not, doesn't seem like a good day. But I think we should have an attitude of gratitude, and we should be grateful for every day that God gives us. Would you agree with me? I think that should be our goal, whether it's realistic and whether we can accomplish it. I don't know if it's possible to do that, but I think we should be striving for that. We should be grateful for every day, every single day. And I think we should take the time to appreciate the small things that God does for us with the time that he gives us. I don't know if you thought about it. Today was a beautiful day. The weather was beautiful. I thought it was a beautiful winter day. The sunset tonight was gorgeous. Did you notice that? The sunrise yesterday, what day was that? Just recently, we had a beautiful sunny morning and the sky was red. And of course, I mentioned to you that I was a dairy farmer. I didn't grow up farming, but I learned in a hurry that you get to learn what the weather is going to do by looking at the sky. It's not rocket science. But if you have a beautiful red sunrise, what does that mean, Wes? Yeah. And it's almost without fail. It works, doesn't it? At least some kind of rain is in the forecast. Red sky in the morning, sailor's warning. But yeah, we need to take the time to appreciate the things that God made. And I didn't plan to talk about this, and I'm not going to say much about it, but these handheld electronic devices and the larger ones that we look at, and it's a scary thought. It's scary when I see it, like what's happening. I went into the break room today, and there were three young people in the break room having their lunch break, and I didn't go in there to look for it. I went in there to rinse out my coffee mug, and I looked over, and two of them were engrossed on something on their phones, and the other one doesn't have a phone, cell phone, and so she was just eating her lunch, and I think she may have been reading, which was a blessing to see. And I thought, wow, they should be talking to each other, not to their phones or whatever they're looking at. Oh, boy. World's changed, Wes, even since 11 years ago. It's incredible how it's changed. And I have to be careful. I need to guard against it because I'm certainly not the best example oftentimes. So we don't want to do the same things repeatedly. So if you turn to Numbers 23 in your Bibles, we want to talk a little bit about some of these scripture references here. Maybe you have some thoughts before we get too far into the lesson. Well, one question I did want to ask you is, I thought this was an interesting thought. Does my schedule reflect the goals of my mission statement? Now, we have a mission statement at work, and we have a mission statement, I guess, in our church maybe. But do you have a personal mission statement? I have to say I don't have one. Like, I never wrote one out. It's okay. If you want to raise your hand, you can. Does anybody have a personal mission statement? No. I never took the time to do it. I thought, wow, that's an interesting concept. Maybe that's something that I should do, to have a personal mission statement. But yeah, if we turn to Numbers 23, 10, who can count the dust of Jacob and the number of the fourth part of Israel? Let me die the death of the righteous and let my last end be like this. And so who made this good sounding statement is the question number one about where he wanted to end up. Who was that? Somebody tell me. Okay. So, you know what I learned from this? Well, we're going to look into this a little bit. I think it's worth doing that. But one of the things I thought of, Paul, was, you know, we can easily say and do the right thing and make pretty lofty commitments and statements. And we know that do you think he had good intentions? Did he mean what he said? No, he didn't. And that's sobering when you think about it, isn't it, really? Because, you know, I've heard you, of course, we've all heard of the term unconditional eternal security. And I have friends and I know people that would subscribe to that theology or that doctrine. And I've heard statements like, praise God, I've got my ticket. I know where I'm going. And I hear those things and I understand what they mean, but it makes me kind of cringe because we're not on this. We're still on this side of eternity. We have not reached our goal yet. We're not in heaven. We're here on this earth and we've got a job to do and we need to remain faithful. And it takes commitment and it takes each other's friendships and prayers and meeting together like this and encouraging each other and admonishing each other and loving each other for us to make it from here safely home to heaven. And so we have a job to do and we need to remember that we're not in heaven yet. And so we want to remain faithful. And Balaam made some statements that sounded good. And we can do the same thing. You know, oftentimes I'm on the board for Bald Eagle Boys Camp. I have been for quite a few years, and I have the opportunity to read applications oftentimes, young men that want to be chiefs at Bald Eagle. And it's not unusual, and you've heard this yourselves, for a young person to give their lives to the Lord, to make a public confession, to make a statement up front, and to do what then? It's life. What happens? And some people fall away. You know, I made a commitment and I kind of slipped and I fell away. I hear that a lot. And I'm not being critical, because if I'm not careful, I can do the same thing. And my devotional life suffers. My prayer life suffers. I get busy with the things that I'm doing at work and other commitments I've made, and I neglect the important things. And so we have to be careful that we're faithful in that way. Any other thoughts on Balaam? Did he live up to the mission statement? So he apparently had a mission statement. It says here, give a scripture reference to support your answers. So what are your thoughts as far as Balaam is concerned? Did he keep his commitments? Paul says no. So what happened to him, do you think? Do you think what happened to him could happen to us? Nolan, what do you think? Could it happen to us? Certainly. So what happened with him? Maybe he wasn't sincere to begin with. Yeah. Yeah, he was influenced by money and power. Yeah, that's true. So it could be that he was maybe not what he appeared to be, right? A hypocrite, we would say. I'm not sure what other word to use, but, you know, we certainly don't want to be that. In the business that we have, we work a lot, our family and our employees, the folks we work with, work a lot with the public and people from all walks of life. And I think that's a privilege. It's really a privilege to be able to work with the public. And it's a huge responsibility too. And so we hear a lot of things from our customers that are encouraging and make us feel good and are a blessing. And some of the things they say and they think, their perspective of us as a company and our employees is maybe somewhat skewed. They probably think more highly of us than they ought to. Does that make sense? I know when I first worked with Mennonites 30-some years ago, the first experience I had building houses and framing with a group of conservative Anabaptist guys. That was my first real experience working with people like that and getting close to people like that. I want to say this so that it doesn't sound wrong. I really thought very, very highly of them. Like, I was impressed. I was impressed with their language, their prayers that they had before they ate, the way they conversed with each other, their wholesomeness, their lunches, a little Tupperware container that was shaped like a piece of pie. It's the first time I ever saw one of those. But just being around them made me feel good, made me feel clean, made me feel good. I enjoyed it. And I thought very, very highly of those guys, and I still do. they made a big impact on me, but I probably thought more highly of them than I should because they were human and they probably had bad thoughts and probably occasionally said bad things and they probably made some mistakes. And if they're human, they probably did. And we do too. But I always say we should strive with God's grace to be the people that others think we are. Is that a good goal to have, Paul? So if somebody is thinking more highly of us than we wish they would, we're like, oh, don't. Yeah, I'm not perfect. Our goal with God's grace should be, well, why don't we strive to be the people they think we are, the people they perceive us to be? That's a lofty goal. And try and live up to people's expectations with God's help. We're going to fall short, make mistakes, but I think it's proper for us to feel that way. So we don't want to be hypocrites. We don't want to profess something and then not be what we profess to be. That is a horrible, horrible thing to do. So if you're right, Paul, and he was claiming to be one thing and yet he was another, he was saying these things and he wasn't sincere, that is not good. We certainly don't want to find, be better off being hot or cold and just say, hey, is that how I feel, or I'm not there yet, than to fake it, right? So we have some Bible verses in our place of business and one in the cheese room on the wall. And we have Christian literature out, some books and different things. And I always say, you know, we can put those things up and we can dress a certain way and we can act a certain way. But if the Holy Spirit isn't abiding in our hearts and we're not truly born again and we're not for real, we're not real, then it's a waste. It's not going to have any effect on anybody in a positive way. You can't fake it. We can't fake it as Christians. Years ago, we were looking for really good, what I call hoagie rolls, when we opened our sandwich shop. And I wanted a certain roll, Amoroso hoagie rolls from Philadelphia, call them subs or whatever you want, but we call them hoagies. And I wanted these hoagie rolls. And so the sales guy that had the route truck, the Amoroso truck, came to our farm years ago, and he put all these rolls out on the table, and he was talking about all these hoagie rolls, and he left a bunch for us to try, and he left, and my daughter Joyce said, man, Dad, he was the real deal, like a total Philly guy with his rolls. And I was like, you're right, he's the real deal. And I don't know if that makes sense to you, but we should be the real deal, not somebody that professes to be one thing and is something else. So as far as Balaam is concerned, I don't know, Paul, if he really, how sincere he was at one point, I can't say for sure, but we do know that he failed in the end. And even Revelations would confirm that, because to one of the churches, which church was it that it quotes that? See if I can find that. Revelations 2:14, the church of Pergamos. It says that he was basically a bad person, and he got the Israelites to do a lot of bad things. And so he wasn't a good person in the end. So we want to be faithful. So he made a profession, and it wasn't what he claimed to be. Any other thoughts on that? Yeah, because Balaam even made a statement. He says when he was asked to do something contrary to what God had shared with him, his answer to Balak said, "But what the Lord saith, that shall I speak." So he said things like that. And so he obviously wasn't sincere. So Ephesians chapter 5, see then that you walk circumspectly, not as fools, but as wise, redeeming the time, because the days are evil. Wherefore, be ye not unwise, but understanding what the will of the Lord is. So we need to walk circumspectly. What does that mean with our time? Ryan, what do you think? What does it mean to walk circumspectly? Did your dad ever tell you when you left the house, when you were at Turiel High School? Say a junior, hey, walk circumspectly. Sort of. Yeah, right. He probably did in so many words, right? To be a hon, remember who you are. Yeah, good. That's great. Well, your dad's a good dad, and he did a good job raising your family, as he invested a lot of time in training you, teaching you, and reminding you who you were. So it's important. We need to do that. It's a critical role we play as parents. So what, to walk circumspectly then, what does that mean? Not a word we use a lot today. Carefully. That's exactly right. That's a good way to view it. Carefully, to be careful, to be as wise as a serpent, and as harmless as a dove, right? We need to gird up the loins of our mind and be sober. It says here that the days are evil. And yeah, what do you think are the redeeming the time because the days are evil? What are your thoughts about that? Is that something we need to be aware of or concerned with, or what do you think? We could talk about that all night, I think. The world's changing so fast, and it's hard to believe the things that you hear and read and the things that people are... Even my son-in-law, Braden, is in medical school, like I said, and he's in his third year now. I think in his second year, last year, if I'm not mistaken, they had a professor in his 80s, I think. He was from the University of Ohio, I think Ohio State, and he came to West Virginia to Braden's medical school, and he had a whole day with all the medical students on the pronouns that we're to use and how... And he was sold on that. And I just could hardly believe it. Like how Braden, as a doctor, he wants to be a family doctor, how he should relate to his patients when they come into his room. And I thought, wow, that's different, Wes, than it was 11 years ago when we were here together on the steps. The world's changing. And so, you know, we could just get really discouraged and we could get upset. And I guess there's such a thing, and there is, as a righteous indignation. It should bother us, and it's okay. But I don't think we should feel defeated, and I don't think we should be so discouraged that, you know, we're ready to give in. There's still a lot of good in the world, I believe. There's still a lot of Christians in the world. There's still a lot of people that want to do the right thing. There's still a lot of hope. There's a lot of life, and where there's life, there's hope, and there are people that are searching, and we're here for such a time as this. This is when God put us here. It's not a mistake. So we need to be faithful, and we need to look for the good, and we need to try and do good, and we can't get too discouraged, even though the things around us are somewhat discouraging. We're on our way home from Ohio. We were out in Ohio for a business trip this week, Monday and Tuesday. And yesterday, Roberta was reading her book. We were on the turnpike. I didn't say anything to her, but I saw a billboard on the Pennsylvania Turnpike. It was a picture of a guy kissing his dog, and it said, let me think now, I get it right. It said, people spread COVID, dogs spread love. And I was like, come on. I mean, like, why would you say something like that? I mean, what does that imply? People are bad and they're making people sick, and dogs are what it's all about. And I'm thinking to myself, dogs don't spread love. I'll tell you that right now. I don't mind dogs. We have a dog and they have their place. But people, God's people, spread love. Christians spread love, not dogs. And again, you see those things and it's like a kick in the gut. You think, come on. I mean, what's up with that? And you could probably give me examples of things you've read this week that didn't feel too good. But we need to rise above that, and we have to be filled with the truth, and we need to make sure that we gird up the loins of our mind, because if we're not careful, eventually we're going to become desensitized and we're going to start to become weak and we're going to start to give in. And if we don't, our children will. So we got to indoctrinate our children. We've got to develop conviction in our children, and we've got to have conviction ourselves. We don't have to be mean or angry or it's a word I'm looking for, holier than thou, or look down on other people that would put a billboard like that out. But we need to be gracious and kind, and we need to share the truth, right? That's a good thing for us to do, I think. So I never want to get to the place where we feel better than others and more enlightened and have more wisdom. The lesson talks about that a little bit. And so we're somehow, you know, up here, and these people are just don't get it. Let me just ask you this. How many of you were carried into church as a baby? Come on, be honest. Probably most of you. The baby should raise her hand too, or your little baby. Is it a boy or a girl? Is your a girl? Yeah, I thought maybe. She's awfully cute. How old is she? 4 months. Wow, that's amazing. That's a lot of fun. So, you were carried into church as a baby, okay? And that's beautiful. And I hope that you carry your children in and they carry their children in to church as babies and train them up and teach them, have them go to Christian day school or homeschool and whatever you choose to do, but teach them the ways of the Lord. Stay in the word, have family devotions, like I said, sing together, pray together, all those things. But that is a gift. it is a gift. Okay. You didn't choose to be carried into church as a baby. That was a gift God gave you. And so freely we have received, we must freely give. So if you've been given the gift of having a knowledge and an understanding of the heart and mind of God through the scriptures, you've been taught well, you've been raised in a godly home, you've had every opportunity, then that's a gift. And so we're called to share that gift, right? So when we see people that don't understand and they don't know, you'd be shocked how many people just don't know. They just have no idea. And there are people that are educated. There are people that have good jobs. And you meet them and you think the only people that are worth helping are somewhere on the other side of the globe, because everybody in America understands and knows with all the churches we have. But I'll tell you right now, that is not the case. It is simply not the case. I mean, even for myself, grew up in the all-American home. And I did all the things that most American young guys do. I didn't know anything, nothing. And there's a lot of people like me out there. So I'm just simply saying, with the time you have, don't hesitate to share what you have. Don't just keep it to yourself and not be willing to share it. That is certainly not what God is calling us to do. So any other thoughts on that? Understand what the will of the Lord is and walk circumspectly, carefully, diligently, whatever word you want to put there. We have to be diligent. We need to exercise diligence. We need to be thoughtful people. We can't be persuaded via the electronic media or the general public to think things, to develop opinions about things that are contrary to the will of God. We need to know who we are and what we believe. Do you agree? I mean, we need to know. Spending your time wisely, just like spending your money wisely, really redeeming it and using it for good. It's a good thought, Wes, because really that's the heart of the lesson, isn't it, really? Because, I mean, it was a challenge for me when I read this, because I'm always, people say, you know, are you busy? And I hear that a lot. And I think what they mean is, are you busy at work or whatever? And I say, oh yeah, I'm busy, but I'm always busy. It never seems like I can get enough done, pretty much. But then I sometimes say, I'm just not always busy doing what I should. And isn't that the truth if we're honest? I mean, yeah, I'm really busy, but I'm not always busy doing what I should. Would you agree? Is that possible? Or are you always busy doing what you should do? Maybe you're doing better than I am. We spend a lot of time, you know, doing things that probably, I don't know, that maybe don't have a lot of value, eternal value. Lay up treasures in heaven, and we want to spend our time doing things that are productive. Any other thoughts on that? I haven't given you a chance to talk much. I want to hear from you. What are your thoughts on any of these things? Paul, you said you were going to help me out. Yeah, no, I'm not either. No. You're not really being productive. Is that what you mean? Or? Yeah. I remember Merle Burkholder had revivals at Lichty's a long time ago. I mean, it could have been 24 years ago. I remember in that, during those meetings, he talked about riding bicycle with his son. I forget how far they went. It was a crazy amount, crazy distance. And I just remember that stuck with me because he wanted to spend time with his son. It was important to his son. And I think Merle said it was almost more than he could handle. And then I remembered, I told Roberta, I rode my bike down here a couple of times for summer Bible school. And if I had to do that again, like I was coming up the hill from, is it 372, right? That was the worst part of the whole ride. It was the worst part of the ride. I mean, everything was all, it was pretty good actually until I got there and turned right. And it was just torture. And I remember one time Roberta and the children went flying past and they like, woohoo, you know, hollering out the window. And I was like, your dad's ready to have a heart attack. I don't think I'm going to make it. Oh, man. I couldn't do it today. I thought to myself, coming up that hill with the car, I thought it almost made me tired just sitting in the car seat. There's no way I could ride my bike up that hill today, Wes. I don't think I could do it. So time has a way of changing things. I'm not in good shape anymore like that. But yeah, Merle was talking about all the busyness in the world and how it's so fascinating when you think about all the things that are happening with technology and all the discoveries that are being made. And it's fascinating. It is. You step back and it's almost like a wonder. But he said, where's it all? What's it all for? Like what? It's like from here to there. And is there anything new under the sun? So yeah, are we doing things that have eternal value with our time? We can be really, really busy. But are we busy doing things that have eternal value? That's a good thought. Any other thoughts on some of those things? Maybe somebody rode their bike here tonight. Tell me about that. I doubt it. That was summer Bible school, not winter Bible school that I did that. Yep. And that's a really good point. Not like a herd of buffalo that we're just going to get with the herd and just go wherever the herd's going. We were just talking about that, Roberta and I. And I said sometimes it's easy. As parents, you'll hear your children saying, "Well, you know, you've heard that. Well, everybody's doing it now. It's just what everybody does. It's just what everybody does now." And I'm like, "Yeah, but that's not what you do. It's not what we do. It doesn't mean just because everybody's doing it that it's the right thing. We need to be intentional." Would Art be your grandfather? Or that's really interesting that you said that. That you said what you said, because I don't have my Bible. I have a Bible with me, of course, but it's not my Bible that I have my Bible case that I use for church on Sundays, because it's totally falling apart. I need to get it. I mean, it literally is, the pages are coming out, but I have it all marked up and I like it. I like that Bible. I like it way better than this one. I know where things are. And I have in the front cover, I wish I had it because I'd read it to you. It was something your dad said again at Lichty's long, long time ago. And I wrote it down because I never forgot it. He said, anything in life worth having is worth working for. That's what he said. And I never forgot that. And really, I mean, you could be criticized or accused of being a works-oriented Christian, but I don't, it's just not going to happen on its own. Let me just say that. It's going to take commitment, and it's going to take fortitude. It's going to take determination. It's going to take the grace of God. But it's just things like that just don't happen. Nothing just happens. It's good. Usually things that just happen aren't good. So we need to be purposeful. We need to be, yeah, focused. Great point. I went to the Melvin and Dan and said it, and doing it the second time.
I said, do it right the first time, and it's done.
Yeah. Yep, that's true. You know, I thought about that too. I thought, I like to read through Proverbs. I mean, it's easy because you can read a chapter every morning through the month pretty much. And yeah, it's really, really good. And after a while, you can almost find yourself, oh yeah, you know, I know. It becomes very, very familiar. But as I read through Proverbs, there's several things that stick out to me that are very, very clear. And one is that we certainly don't want to be lazy. We need to be people that are hard workers and put forth effort. And are willing to, and there's some verses in here, I certainly didn't get to them, but they talk about that. I think it's good to be a hard worker. It's not really wrong if we work hard to provide for ourselves. I mean, we need to do that. The person that's the sluggard or lazy is criticized in the Bible over and over and over again. And there's verses in here that refer to that. They're not preparing. They're not providing and they're not working and they're just, it's slumber and it's not good. And I think it's good to work hard, although we can work too hard. And there's verses in the Bible that refer to that, that reference that as well. But I think it's good for us to be hard workers and to provide. You know, Paul and Elsie invite us to come to their house one evening for a meal. And I've been to their house for a meal. I've had meals there. And I know we've had good meals at Paul and Elsie's house. And I think Elsie's a good cook. I'm sure Paul would agree. And, you know, when we think of even something as basic as a meal, for example, well, Elsie, say you're going to prepare a nice meal on Sunday for some family or friends from church, and you prepare all these dishes, all the things that you're putting out, you had to work hard to put them out, put them together, and make them nice, and I don't know, whatever it is that you'd serve, you know, you have to put forth effort to put all that stuff together. Or Paul, in your wood shop, if you want to put something together in there, you're not just going to want to make a tractor, a toy tractor for your great grandson or whoever, and go out there one morning and there it is, the tractor's there. God provided. Praise God, there's the tractor. Or praise God, there's the meal. Elsie, you get home from church and it's there. It's all ready to go. It's warm. All you have to do is get out and serve it. God doesn't work that way. But God gave you all the ingredients you need to make that meal. He gave you all those ingredients. God created all those things for us. So there's a God part and a people part. God says, here's the wood, and here are the tools you need to make that tractor. Now, Paul, get to work and make that tractor. It's a team effort, right? And so I think that's often the case with God. God gives us the tools we need to do the things we need to do, but he expects us to work hard and to do our part. And then that can be rewarding. It can be gratifying, and it can be a blessing, and we can bless others with those things, whether it's serving a meal or giving somebody a gift that we made in our wood shop. So we can do good things by working hard. So yes, we want to do things right the first time, and we have to be willing to work hard, even though sometimes we do make mistakes. Any other thoughts in closing that you want to share?
You see your hand.
Is that right? Well, that's a compliment, isn't it? That's good. That's a good thing. Yep. Any other thoughts on time? I mean, like I said in the beginning, I think we need to be mindful of the decisions we make. We're all faced with decisions every day, every minute of every hour, pretty much. What we'll think about, what we'll do, what we'll say, what we'll eat, where we'll go, what we'll listen to or watch, what we'll put before our eyes. Yeah, we'll put no wicked thing before mine eyes. It will not cleave unto me. That's being purposeful. That's being mindful and prepared and prudent. And so we need to be careful that we make the right decisions and that we spend our time wisely, because I believe God is probably going to hold us accountable for what we did with the time that he gave us. Would you agree? I think he will. So Lord bless you, and thank you for your attention and your thoughts. Lord willing, we'll see you next Wednesday.